Life.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Cartagena.
Solidarity.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sasktel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and I'm joined today by my co-host Tetende Chukwukwa and our special guest, Otto Dreger. How close am I to...
Very good.
Anyway, Otto is Professor Emeritus at the University of Regina Department of Justice Studies. So welcome, everyone.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
And our topic today is one that some people may be familiar with, but I suspect a lot may not be.
That's right.
And we want to talk about COSA. Mm-hmm. And COSA stands for Circles of...
Support and Accountability.
Yes.
That's right.
Right on the bit. Let's back up here a little bit. COSA is about reintegrating... convicted sexual offenders who have served their time, they're released, now what? And let's talk about what used to happen before COSA. Mm-hmm.
Well, before COSA, one of the legislative things that happened in the criminal code was that many people were held till warrant expiry. Up to that change in legislation, persons would automatically be released after two-thirds of their sentence, mm-hmm. and they would mm-hmm. serve the last third of their sentence in the community. Mm-hmm. But when this change in legislation occurred, then people could be held until warrant expiry much more easily than they before. And so a lot of violent offenders and violent sex offenders, were held till warrant expiry. Mm-hmm. And then when they were held till warrant expiry, then there was no parole or no community supervision through parole or anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's when the COSAs started. Mm-hmm. When the first persons came out in the late 90s, unworn expiry. Mm-hmm. The very first person that came out on that went to Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Hamilton was very much against having him in the community. Mm-hmm. And so they had 7 days a week, 24-hour-a-day surveillance by the police of him in his apartment. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the city knew that on the long run they couldn't do that. So there was a community chaplaincy or internal city chaplaincy that was operated by the Mennonite community. And they were asked to see whether they could connect up with this person in terms of forming a circle of support and accountability. At that, there was a particular psychologist, Robin Wilson, who was with his system at that time and explored this, as well as one of the community chaplain or the regional chaplain, Hugh Kierkegaard. And so Harry Nye, who was the pastor in that downtown service, got a few people together, and they decided as a community that they would do this. And they sort of formed a bit of a group of people. And this was monitored then by the Mennonite Church of Ontario, the Mennonite Central Committee, to see, okay, how would this go, and what are the principles that would be developed. And then that was happening in the late 90s, and then when it was seen to be very successful, then the Correctional Service of Canada was very interested in then moving this forward, and then it started developing and mushrooming across the country. And there were a lot of circles sites. Now there are 18 sites where there are circles of this kind. Their principles have been developed as to how one sort of goes about that. Mm-hmm. And actually it's also caught on in a number of the states in the United States. And United Kingdom has developed a national policy on support of this whole thing. And also some of the continental European, for instance, Florence and I have been invited to go to Spain for a major conference on restorative justice to speak about this, and others have gone from Canada as well to do this. Mm-hmm. Long answer to a short question.
Yeah, really, when you think about it, that's quite a difference. Warrant expiry, I'm sort of familiar with that because I know someone who had such problems with the idea of being on parole.
Yeah,
he just couldn't get along with the system.
Yeah.
When he was put back in, he just decided not to apply for parole until the end of his sentence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, then they have to release him, and then you're on your own.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So this is what was going on with our sexual, the offenders.
Yeah.
Was there any provision? There was no official provision for any kind of support whatsoever?
No, none whatsoever. And you see, a person, particularly with a violent sexual offending, usually the persons have been in for anywhere from 10 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have no friends,
right,
other than ones they would have made inside. Their families usually have rejected them. And nobody in the community wants them, so that they're wherever they might locate, they're hated.
Right.
Well, and then if a person wants to go straight, which then there are already three strikes against that person. In addition, he's been out of the community for between 10 and 30 years, so things have changed a lot in that period of time.
Right.
So, and it is very important that it's not only circles of support, it's also accountability. And I always say that we all have support groups.
Mm-hmm.
And friends or colleagues at work or family. And, for instance, I always say that if I'm going to do something stupid, my wife is the first one that's going to say, well, that's not a very smart idea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not only support, it's also accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to envision here what somebody would do without COSA. Like, you come out, how do you find a place to live?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I presume perhaps if you're old enough, you'd get some kind of money from the government. Like if you're over, mm-hmm. say you're over 65 or something, you'd get something.
Yes, although people that are under that would, generally speaking, they would most likely apply for social assistance, that kind of a thing. So
right,
that.
Right.
Or some of them have skills and would go back to work, and some of them do that.
Now, I know that you guys are not receiving any more funding from the government at the end of next month. Can you tell me exactly what does COSA do that maybe a government program does not do?
Okay, well, first of all, just on the funding.
Yeah.
There was a project under National Crime Prevention Council, a five-year demonstration project under which the funding was provided. That's quite substantial across the country. That is what's ending at the end of September.
Oh, okay.
Prior to that, the Correctional Services of Canada had been providing certain amounts of money, limited amounts of money, to the various sites across the country. That was also going to be cut, but then there was a national objection to that, and the government has reinstated that. Which is across the country $350,000, which
oh my goodness,
over the number of people places is small peanuts.
Right.
But
yeah.
They've said that will be cut out at the end of March as well. There will be nothing of that either after the end of March
next year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So then after that, there will be no CSC money coming in.
And how do they justify this? What's their? One has to think they have a plan. You have, so many corrections officials that have seen the result of what. Let's talk about success rate. I mean, prior to COSA, there'd be a very high rate of reoffending. So what was the rate, like that? This success story of COSA.
Yeah, well, there's been research done already in Ontario, on success rates. And there are over 80%, if a person has a circle of support and accountability, there is over 80% of those persons that will not reoffend sexually or violently as compared to a control group. So that the success rate is over 80%.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is quite impressive.
Yeah. And now that this five-year demonstration project that's ending at the end of September, that there's additional research and information that is going to be available from across the country in terms of, they haven't done the technical with the control groups and stuff, but a lot of additional research is going to be available once that report comes in after September.
Let's compare some costs here. The government that we have at the moment, it talks about being fiscally responsible. Let's compare the cost of having an offender in the system, in the penitentiary, compared to having them in the community with a circle of support.
Yeah. Well, for a circle of support and accountability, it costs approximately between $10,000 and $12,000 a year. With having a person incarcerated, usually they would be incarcerated at the maximum security level or in the federal system anyway, which would be anywhere between $120,000 and $130,000 a year.
Jeez.
Now, in addition, a person that successfully reintegrates, not only isn't he in prison, but a substantial number of them work. And so that there is actually productivity plus paying taxes. Like, for instance, in Regina now, we have 13 circles. Well, actually, 14, I guess. And a number of them work. Some of them have health problems or other situations that make them not work, but a goodly portion of them do work, and so that's the situation. Yeah, actually, in Regina, since we started in about 2001, we have worked with about 25 people. Of those. one has reoffended sexually and violently, and one of them was back into computer kind of stuff that he was not allowed to do in terms of pornography and so forth. So that's our percentages are higher than 80% in Regina area.
Mm-hmm. And who are the counselors that meet with these offenders?
Well, we see it's not a counselor thing. It's basically a friendship.
A friendship.
So that we have between 3 and 5 persons that will form the circle with the core, what we call the core member, the person that has come out.
Okay. So and it's one offender and then three and five.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's considered a friendship circle, mm-hmm. not a therapy circle,
okay.
nor a surveillance circle.
Okay.
We interrelate a lot with police and probation and parole and so forth. But it's very clear that we are not an extension of surveillance, nor are we a therapy or a treatment program.
Mm-hmm.
If a person needs treatment, we will refer them to mental health or to whatever they need. And we will facilitate, of course, but we are not... there's a number of professionals that work in circles of support and accountability,
mm-hmm.
but we have to sort of say that we're not. We don't have our professional mm-hmm. hat on. We mm-hmm. have our interpersonal relationship and friendship hat on when we're relating to
so members. It's a way for them to socialize without being judged.
That's right, exactly, yeah. But also to be held accountable.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what a lot of the guys say, that we can talk to you as friends, you respect us as people, recognizing that we've done things that are absolutely negative and abhorrent, but you treat us as human beings
mm-hmm.
Who have offended mm-hmm. seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And but we also recognize the role of probation and parole, and the role of police are very important. So we don't negate. We say, mm-hmm. but our role is different,
mm-hmm.
and we make a certain contribution which the others do not make, and they make contributions that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how you think when the money, well, let's say when your funding's gone here,
yeah.
our circles of accountability and responsibility, are they going to be gone as well? I mean, does this end of the funding mean the end of COSA?
No, it doesn't. No, because there's a lot of people that are committed to continuing to work. Like we have, as I said, at the present time, about 13 circles here in Regina. Mm-hmm. Let's use it as an example. We have about 45 volunteers that are working with circles. We have a board that is a volunteer board. We have shifted now because our funding has been decreased. We're having a part-time person on. And after we are trying to find support through either community or foundations. We're also nationally working with the national government to see whether there are alternative ways of getting additional funding.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working with the provincial government and the dialogue with them to see whether there's any possibilities. But even if none of the funding comes through, we do get a little bit of money from the Mennonite Central Committee,
mm-hmm.
provincially, and from the Mennonite Church Saskatchewan. We've also received some money from the Catholic community, the diocese here. So what we would not be going down,
mm-hmm.
but we'd be scraping by. And we wouldn't be able to
mm-hmm.
develop the program to mm-hmm. the extent that it is potential.
So you're basically mm-hmm. missing the professional people that support your group.
Well, we would continue with the interrelationship with police and so
mm-hmm.
forth, but we wouldn't have the coordinator that would really be able to work this other than on a volunteer basis. On a volunteer basis, you cannot do the thing on mm-hmm. As mm-hmm. adequate a basis as you mm-hmm. can if you have higher staff.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it like for someone who's volunteered to do this kind of thing? Do they just join a group, or are they somehow matched up with a person?
Okay, that's a very important point. People apply to be volunteers, and we have volunteers that come from faith communities, from the university, young people, particularly in the justice area and the human and the social work areas.
Have you ever had like a practicum with it?
Or? Yes, we have. Okay. Yeah, we've had a number of practicums, students as well. Mm. So we get them from various sources. Also, some people that are not based on faith or university, some people who have a humanist interest in this also volunteer. So we have a whole range of different volunteers that come. We will look at, review who the volunteers are. I mean, the volunteers, as you know, in volunteerism, some people want to volunteer because they want to see it as therapy for themselves. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not if it's a volunteer kind of a thing that is appropriate, which the 99% are, then and then we have training sessions. Because there's important elements in this whole thing. When you're working with persons that have come out after many years, the training also identifies then what are the boundaries in terms of what don't you do with people, as well as what do you do with people, so that there are boundaries that are important.
What kind of boundaries? Examples?
Well, for example, if a person says to a person in the circle, okay, I don't want any of the other people in the circle to know about this. Let's you and I make an arrangement about what's going to happen and so forth. There's no secrets in the circle, so that would be a boundary. Mm-hmm. Another one, if a person wanted to, let's say, with a young person, wanted to form a relationship that is not within the context of the circle. I mean, in terms of, let's say, a familial relationship kind of a thing. There would be boundaries on that. And then also other kind of things. Like, for instance, we had one person that had no negative implications who wanted to go to a show with one of the people on the circle, which was fine. Mm-hmm. But this was a woman about the same age he was. And then she felt, well, I maybe should check that with the circle. So she did, which would be a boundary kind of a thing. And we sort of said, well, there's nothing wrong. There's no negative. But what would it look like if a policeman noticed that you were there with a young woman in a show? It would immediately could become a public issue in a negative kind of a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, well, maybe that's not the wisest thing to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there are those kind of various things that one would look at in terms of what the boundaries are. Mm-hmm. And another thing that's in the training that is important is what are the trigger points that have a person have a person who is a core member sort of slipping back into his old ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And the circle needs to know, be aware of those, and then when we see the person going sliding back that way, then, you know, having discussions about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even on occasion, like, I mean, we've had a situation where a person was sliding back and stopped communication with the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we said, well, we've got to take this to the police. And we did. And he went back in, not because he had reoffended sexually or violently, but because he was sliding back. And then the police apprehended him, and it was on a breach kind of a thing. And later the guy, when we continued the circle after he had, he said, it was a good thing you did that, because I was sliding back and I needed to got caught up. That's part of the accountability kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
In selecting who is going to be on a particular circle, because of the training and so forth, what we do, for instance, if a person has offended sexually against children, then a young woman is appropriate for that circle because she wouldn't be in danger.
Okay.
But if a person has been violent and sexually violent against young women, you wouldn't put a young woman on that circle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's important for him to be able to relate to women not as sex objects but as people.
Mm-hmm.
So we would put an older woman on.
Okay.
So that he learns to relate to women as people, not as sex objects. So mm-hmm. we do connect that up in a way that would be appropriate, and also try to make it as safe as possible for the volunteers.
What types of things do they discuss in the circle?
Excuse me?
What types of things do they discuss in the circle?
Well, see, that's very, very important, because how do we relate to friends?
Yeah.
That's the basis, so that we do not focus only on the core member.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on it being a discussion related to what's happening in people's lives, including the core member. And sometimes there are, it's not needs oriented either. The circle isn't there to quote meet the needs of the core member.
Mm-hmm.
It's a friendship thing.
Okay.
But as friends, if a person has a problem, you'll be supportive of it, or you'll try to work with them, so that if a person has problems with housing or with health or with whatever, then one would sort of discuss those kind of things. So those are the kind of things that would then be discussed.
Okay.
And yeah.
Well, believe it or not, Otto, we've come to the end of our first half hour.
Okay, well, that's amazing, yeah.
And so we're going to go to our break, and I think we'll do some Simon and Garfunkel after that. And our plan is to play some Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
This is also one of our new songs. It's called Bridge Over Troubled Water. Comes and pain is all around, like a bridge. sail on, silver girl, sail on.
And that, of course, was Simon and Garfunkel from 1969. And, of course, Paul Simon took off to have a really spectacular solo career. And Art Garfunkel, not so much. But a wonderful song. Wonderful song, yeah. We were just discussing here during the break the whole concept of restorative justice. Into which I think the whole concept of COSA fits very well.
Very much, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what, I don't know, Otto, my opinion is that our government, sometimes they'll talk about restorative justice, but we don't see it very much.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, restorative justice has a number of major streams that have contributed extensively to the concept of the Irish restorative justice movement. One of them is after the Second World War, there were a lot of initiatives towards rehabilitation and treatment as an alternative to punishment and incarceration. And so that is one of the streams. I think the rehabilitation stream made a very important contribution to the conceptualization of restorative justice. Another one that has not been identified as strongly in many of the restorative justice conceptualizations is the contribution of victimology, which was a subset of criminology. And when they started doing research in victimology back in the 70s, they found that actually over 70% of the victims were not focused on punishment or vengeance. They would say, "We don't want this to happen again." And the way for this not to happen again is for the person to change. And so that actually when they said, okay, if you find ways of having this person change by training, programs, rehabilitation, by interrelationships and stuff like that, that's what they really wanted. That was much more important than having the person be in jail for the rest of their lives. There's a certain percentage of the victims who do not get over vengeance or punishment. And that is the group that is being responded to in societies where they say victims want punishment. Well, a certain percentage do, but a very large percentage do not. And that is the group that is ignored when one goes entirely into the punishment and vengeance kind of an approach. So, victimology as an academic analysis of what this situation has made a very big contribution to the restorative justice concept, because a lot of victims want the restoration kind of a thing. Then you have the faith communities have had a very important contribution in terms of mediation, healing, and all of those kind of reconciliation and kind of things for that aspect of the faith community. And the fourth very important movement into the restorative justice has been the First Nations communities, not only in North America, but also in New Zealand and in Australia, where their group interaction in terms of a victim and so forth, or an offender, and getting the offenders and the victims together, and so forth. And there's all kinds of examples. If we had 3 hours to do this, we could sort of get into some of those examples, both in terms of victim-offender mediation, or in terms of family group counseling, or where there's been examples in Canada, in northern Canada, where a person from one reserve killed a person from another reserve who were next to each other, and how they had a group meeting, and there was reconciliation of the victims and the offenders, but also between the two communities. And when the person had served his time, when he came back, he became the chief of the reserve. That kind of stuff. There's all kinds of examples where a person has vandalized, for instance, an older person's home, and then in the reconciliation thing, that person has come and assisted to repair the damage, and then a good friendship developed. Now that's the kind of initiatives that there are in the restorative justice arena. And Circles of Support and Accountability fit very much into that, because getting persons back into a positive relationship in the community, with people in the community, so that they can sort of become, again, part of a productive part of the community.
Right.
I see that working very well on like a local level. But like on a national level, like the Canadian government had the reconciliation and with the First Nations people, it didn't really, I don't know why it failed on a national level, but I can see that really happening on a local level.
Right. Yes,
like it would really work on a local level.
The best example of it having worked effectively on a national level is South Africa, actually.
Yeah.
And that is where, but then you have to have persons with the status of Mandela and Desmond Tutu who really can provide national leadership on doing that. And that to me was a really very, very successful kind of thing. Actually, Desmond Tutu has just written a book together with his daughter on the Forgiving Book.
Okay.
It's very interesting.
In terms of restorative justice, what's your sense of where our systems are going now, like nationally and provincially? To me, it seems like a direction that you want to head in, because you have such positive outcomes.
Yeah. Well, actually, provincially, there is a section of the Department of Justice that is a section on restorative justice. So there's a lot of alternative measures, all that kind of a thing, are happening in the province, which is really very important. Nationally, there's also a section in the Correctional Service of Canada on restorative justice. And there are many good things that are also happening there. But then when you get into the mentality that there is in society at particular times, that is either enhanced or diminished. And the important thing is that structurally it's there, and it is continuing, but sometimes at a more restrictive level, and other times at a more enhanced level.
Right.
Just a question. We were talking about the circle before, and have you had members in the circle who have had children and have had to I don't know, mentor or participate in these friendships with these offenders, what is their side to it? Because I can understand that you, as a single person without children, are
I'm married, and I have grandchildren. Oh. I have great-grandchildren, too.
Or just like any general I think somebody without children and somebody with children would have a very different perspective on the whole issue.
Yeah. Let me just sort of think about it.
Yeah. Sorry, I asked so many compound questions.
We have young people who have children who are part of circles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking of whether there are volunteers.
Because I know I can't even bring this subject up to my own mother, because she would be like, you don't have children, you don't understand, you don't don't get it, you know, you don't get how much we worry about our own children. I cannot fathom to even think about this.
Yeah. Whether we have had volunteers who have had children who were molested, I can't just quite think about. I'm not sure about that, but I think we do. Mm-hmm. Now, it depends on one's mentality about that. If a person is open to thinking about it, then if one goes into the research of victims. Mm-hmm. And recognizes that actually a large number of them say that actually people will be safer
mm-hmm.
if they have a circle
mm-hmm.
and that there will be less molestation of children
mm-hmm.
than if you don't have a circle,
mm-hmm.
then people can become very supportive of mm-hmm. it, even if they have children, or actually, mm-hmm. especially if they have children,
mm-hmm.
because you will have less danger if people are connecting back up than if they're isolated.
Mm-hmm.
We had we have one person who I was just used as an example in a small community. They were up in arms that this person was going to move into that community.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a meeting with the mayor, and of course I grew up in a rural area, so that I knew the dynamics of rural places. We said to the mayor, "Let's have a meeting in the coffee shop at 10 o'clock in the morning."
Mm-hmm.
Well, where do people in the small communities, in small towns, where are they at 10 o'clock in the morning? Everybody is in their coffee shop having coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So he was there with about 15 of people from the community. And he said, well, we can go to this other place to have the discussion. No, I said, let's meet with the whole group. So we had a discussion with the total group. And we said, well, actually, if you isolate this person and don't communicate with them at all, then there's a much greater likelihood that your children are going to be in danger. Whereas if you accept him as part of the community, take care that the children are not at his house and stuff like that, then you're going to be much safer.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of the people in the community said, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There were a few that weren't very sure. And we said to the group and to the mayor, if there's ever any concerns that you have, don't hesitate to be in touch with us as circle people
mm-hmm.
or with the police, which were in the next town, because the person himself wants to be safe. He doesn't want to reoffend. And none of us do.
Mm-hmm.
So if we all work on this together, then there's the greatest possibility. Now, he has been in that community for, I think, about 4 years now. And there's no problem in terms of this whole thing. In addition, it was a small town. They didn't have snow clearing stuff. He happened to have a snow blower, and he cleaned the sidewalks of the town, just as so that it depends on how one does this
mm-hmm.
in terms of how safe people are going to be.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And safety is an important principle in terms of circles of support and accountability for volunteers, for the core member, and for the community. And recognizing that the best way to enhance safety
mm-hmm.
is by this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my suggestion would be to your mom, ask her, would she be prepared to have a discussion about it?
Oh, my God.
And then
I'd take 2 Advils before I even start that conversation.
But it is an issue, and a lot of people just can't really see it.
Very taboo to talk about. They want somebody to handle it, but they don't want to be the ones to handle it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
People will definitely say, "Yeah, we should do something about that," but then they won't be willing to do anything.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one has to respect people's views on that too. I mean, and one has to sort of recognize that. Mm-hmm. Some people just really can't get their head around this, and that's we respect them for their perspective as well.
What kind of age range are the core members, would you say?
Core members, we have people, basically they would be between in their 30s to their 60s. Mm-hmm. We have had some core members that are in their 20s. But not as many, because not as many in their 20s are in the space where they feel that they want to sort of reintegrate into society.
Oh, okay.
There would be, I suppose, the odd person who just plain wouldn't be suitable for a circle as a core member.
Well, and that would basically depend on that person's attitude.
Mm-hmm.
If his feeling is that there are a couple of things. One of them is if the attitude is that, well, some people say that I want a circle, but then one recognizes that it is so that he can get off or that he can get on parole, that kind of a thing. And that kind of a person would not be suitable.
Right.
Another one would be if a person has so many or let's say mental health issues or other issues where the problem is needs to have, and if that can be stabilized through mental health services and stuff like that, then a person might well be eligible to be a good person. Another is that where some people are very happy to have the support but not the accountability. And, those are the kind of... We've had circles for some people that that wanted to start, and then when the circle started and went along a bit, and when accountability things came up, they quit. But that's where it is. I mean, next time around, a person might... That same person might say, well... Yeah, I'm ready to take responsibility for some of the things I'm doing.
Right. I was just thinking this is the whole concept of people getting together and interacting reminds me of there's a mental health center in Belgium, I think, that has been a mental health center for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, back in the days before you had the drugs and all the rest of it, it was simple human interaction.
That's right.
You know, and people with mental problems would be paired up with families who would look after them. They'd be a family member.
Yeah, and I visited those kind of places in Sweden, where they'd have a community like that. Talking about what we do in community in circles as well as interaction and stuff, like we have a birthday party.
Okay.
And some of the guys say, I have never had a birthday party in my life.
Wow.
As a kid, that wasn't where it was at. I mean, events of various kinds. And I mean, so that sort of just... And then when another person was saying that he had been in and out of prison for 3 decades or so. And when he comes in, he says, I'm not sure what's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he went to let's say a Robin's Donuts to get a coffee, the clerk would smile at him, and he felt, well, is she coming on to me? Well, no, we say no. He's not coming. She's not coming on to you. That's part of her job, being pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
But the definition of what's normal in relationship to how does one relate to people, you know, those are the kind of things that arise.
Yeah. One thing we haven't touched on at all here is that a lot of these core members, they were abused as children themselves.
Oh, that's right. And when you're talking about victims,
a
very high percentage of them have also been victims.
So they really don't know what normal is.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. Their normal is not the normal.
So it's sort of a situation of you got to crawl before you can walk type of thing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So,
that's right.
In terms of their relationships with other people.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's mm-hmm. a large part of what you're doing in your circle.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there a happy ending, could you say, to this journey? Like,
yeah.
where have you seen a person end up from where they began?
Well,
are they able to have their own family at the end or anything like that?
Well, there's people that have been alienated from their family,
mm-hmm.
and we've got examples of where they've been able to get back together with their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And have a positive family relationship, yes. We have situations where that has not occurred with regard to the family, but a person has become very much part of the community in a positive kind of a way. And we have a sort of a pattern of, quote, graduating from the circle kind of a thing,
right.
You know. And some circles continue on because of their support groups. Other ones are dysfunctional,
mm-hmm.
but somewhere it is not the case, and where mm-hmm. people have a healthy relationship with others in the community, it'll be a positive kind of a thing. So there's lots of those examples. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Otto, we've got about 3 minutes left here now, and what I'd like to do is focus here right now on the financial aspect. What you think the future is here now for COSA in terms of how it's supported financially and that sort of thing. And I think we all realize its value and it has to continue.
Right, yeah.
It has
mm-hmm.
to continue. But what do you think the future holds?
Well, the future will hold for a lot of circles, for sites across the country, that they will continue in terms of volunteer thing and continue searching for support.
Mm-hmm.
And there are potentials both nationally and provincially and locally of possibly, in the long run, I think it'll continue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the frustrating kind of a thing is this whole thing started in Canada,
mm-hmm.
really was developed, and the United Kingdom is running with it. They are financing it fully in order because... And in the States, a number of the states are doing that same thing. But here in Canada, somehow...
And we're pulling back.
We are pulling back. But we think in the long run, that will right itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm an optimist. So that's having worked in this whole human services field for a fair number of years, I would say, you know, at my age... one recognizes that things come and go, and sometimes it's more support, and sometimes not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's kind of astonishing to me that there doesn't seem to be this recognition of what an important program this is.
You know,
and if anything, our federal government should be giving us more support rather than pulling support away.
Well, that's one works at that. I guess
we just have to continue.
That's right, exactly. That's right.
Well, Otto, I'd like to thank you very much for being here with us, and to Tenda.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
This has been a really informative and I think useful program,
mm-hmm.
and I hope people...
It's been a pleasure for me. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."